Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is Bill Hammond, president of the Texas Association of Business. And although you can't see him, I can assure you that every hair on Evan's head is correctly in place, as it always is, given the amount of product he uses. I'm now proud to introduce this week's Tribcast crew.
Thank you, Bill. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Bill Hammond has a lot of nerve, doesn't he? Making fun of me.
I think he was reassuring people. He wasn't making fun of
people. He's the only one who does that.
Fine.
It's like he jumped ahead in the
yes.
line.
I'll go on believing that. Right. That's fine.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Jim Henson from the Texas Politics Project at UT.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Speak for yourself. I see him enough.
The last time Jim was here, actually, I sort of inadequately and inartfully was trying to discuss whether or not the weather here in Texas might cause a problem for Rick Perry on the campaign trail. And then this week...
Jinx.
Yeah, no. I mean, basically, the heat and dryness brought him back for the massive wildfires that are burning down the state. He's going to go on with the debate tonight.
We assume, right? There's been no word that he's not going.
No, they've in fact said that he is going.
Right. Is he on the plane? Do we know?
And they've got fundraisers scheduled. And
yeah, I think they're all go. I don't think we have any indication.
Well, Scott
that they
Braddock owes me lunch.
Something to look forward to.
I know.
That's actually why he couldn't be on the podcast today, because he's off preparing you lunch.
Is that what it is? Yes. Is he got his little chef hat on?
But I was just should he maybe stay in Texas while these wildfires are being dealt with, or is it a good call to go to the debate?
I think he's fine. I mean, you know, he came down and he did the, you know, super county commissioner thing, and you know, stood up there with the Bastrop County Commissioner Ronnie McDonald and Kirk Watson, the state senator, and you know, they all stood there and said, you know, we're doing this and this and this and this and this, and talked to people who'd been affected by the fire. I think he's sort of done the media hit. He's come in. He's done the sort of quote unquote leadership thing. And he's just
going to
be.
Why do you say quote unquote, you communist?
Communist? I'm all distracted now.
I know. That was my evil plan.
You're turning red on the outside.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly.
The joke there is that communists love punctuation marks. Right?
I like that. Red on the outside. That's very nice. What were we talking about?
Why do you say quote unquote leadership?
Well, because he's not in here sort of in the meetings, running the meetings and everything. He comes in and he sort of, you know, blesses the thing and waves a wand over it and then splits for California. He's going to come back and do this stuff. I think he's done the things that he sort of needs to do. He's touched the points that he needs to touch as governor. He'll be gone for a minute, and then he'll come back. You'll see him on the nightly news two nights in a row, and if you're not paying attention, you won't even know he was gone.
Did he have to come back?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, he had to come back. I've never believed that there was anything that kept him from going to the debate here. You know, this was a conversation out in the ether, as all conversations now take place in real time. Well, you know, he shouldn't go to the debate because it will look insensitive. Or if he goes to the debate, they're not going to attack him because, you know, you're attacking a victim. Well, look, I appreciate the fact that a lot of people were suffering these last couple of days. It's a terrible tragedy, and the governor came back, which was the right thing to do. But the governor is not a victim. Texas is a victim. And so for the governor to go out to the debate doesn't diminish what's going on here. It's not disrespectful to the people who suffered. And by the way, it's not disrespectful to the people who suffered if Romney and Bachman and whoever else attack Perry as planned. I don't think that the fire changes any calculation at the debate.
The argument I heard was maybe a more cynical view, more that he could use this as a reason to not go to the debate since he's going to go to the debate and basically be the punching bag of everyone else.
Yeah, I think that was way. Yeah, that's just. I think that was way too Russian again. Use the term again. I mean, it's just, you know, he comes, he makes the appearance, like Ross says, and at the time that he came, there was a certain amount of contingency involved too. I mean, if he comes, he's here, and somehow it gets worse. You know, right. The winds come up in the Gulf, the fire starts burning towards the north, and they start, you know, and things escalate. Well, then.
Well, that was why he had to come back, because if he didn't come back, it would have seemed.
You have to come back because of George Bush in New Orleans. I mean, if nobody ever learned the lesson before that, you have to show up. Even if you can't do anything, you've got to show up.
Did you see the story in The Statesman this morning that the fire chief of the city of Austin was on a golfing trip in Colorado and declined to come back because she thought, oh, it's not Austin.
I mean, she offered to come back, and her subordinates told her it was cool.
Listen,
she could stay.
Listen, the optics, you know, this is the word right. That it's like optics as a word is the yellow Volkswagen of the language right now. You know, it didn't exist, and now you hear it every day. Right. You know, the optics of this for that fire chief are bad. The optics for Mike Bloomberg during the snowstorm in New York several years ago when he was in Bermuda were bad. Right. Whether or not Bloomberg could have done a single thing, he didn't have to go all Cory Booker on New York and actually shovel people's driveways, but being gone looked
bad. Wouldn't have hurt.
But being gone looked bad. Perry being gone would have looked bad.
You got to come
Perry
home for this.
Being here didn't necessarily do anything.
Well, your house is on fire. You go home even if you can't run in. Right. I mean, you got to go.
Well, and actually, this fire probably was kind of close to his house since... The governor's mansion's been closed for however many years, and he lives out in the burbs.
But he's suffered one burned home.
Right.
He's sensitive.
But I see no reason why he couldn't have gone to the debate. It's entirely appropriate that he go to the debate, and it's going to be, you know, as Paul Begala told Emily for the story that we ran this morning, you know, pop the popcorn, crack the Shiner Bock. It's going to be a night worth watching.
That was almost the exact quote.
It was good. It was a good quote.
Yeah. It seems like there's a certain level of government where you just should not play golf at all.
Well, you know, I think you can parse this to death. This is kind of part of the, you know, politicoization of every, you know, micro decision made in politics. If you step back from this, he was going to come. As long as things were okay, he was going to go back on the campaign trail. And the politics of it were perfect for him, really. He got to exercise leadership and responsibility, you know, take a couple of, you know, subtle but unmistakable jabs at the federal government. You know, he sort of, I guess, misspoke in saying that FEMA wasn't going to be here till Wednesday when they were really already on the way as he was speaking. So it's a, you know, he gets to go and hug some victims, and what's not to like about that in a presidential campaign?
And as Ross points out, I mean, Ross's super county commissioner reference, I think, points to an aspect of Perry's history that actually speaks very well for him. There have been a number of instances, as you indicated the other day to me, we were communicating about this on email,
right,
where Perry has, as governor of the state, really stepped up at times of disaster or crisis and done well.
Katrina was a remarkable, you know, sort of the remarkable example here was, you know, we know you've been washed out in Louisiana, come here.
Right. And Bill White will put you up.
Invited him in. I mean, you know, it was Perry. It was interesting. I mean, it was Perry.
And profit off of it, it was, inappropriately.
It was Perry and Bill White and Robert Eccles, and they all sang Kumbaya for about 3 minutes before they didn't. But, you know, it was, it's those moments when a public official is apparently necessary. You know, you may think they're necessary all the time, but it's mostly administrative junk.
Right,
but this is the kind of thing where they step up and you kind of go, you know, we need a governor / a president / a mayor / whatever it is to step up and tell us what to do in a moment of confusion. But, and Perry's really good at that.
But let's also say, had Perry not come back, optics, politics notwithstanding, the relief effort would not have been hindered in any way. The governor being here did not necessarily cause things to happen that otherwise would not have happened.
Right. And nothing happened because the Austin fire chief wasn't here either. But
it's about optics and politics. I agree with you.
Right, but maybe a more substantive political moment might be coming up with this debate. I mean, you could take issue with that even. But
it's substantive, except we're all being tricked. I think we're being tricked into believing that this is this enormously consequential moment, when the reality is that the expectations for Perry have been so lowered that if he doesn't step on his you-know-what during the debate tonight— that he'll be pronounced the victor.
Have the expectations for him been lowered?
Of course. Ray Sullivan was on MSNBC this morning, or on NBC, saying, oh, you know, he's only debated four times. Embry then tweeted back, he thinks it's five. I thought it was only four also. Maybe it is five. He's only debated a certain number of times. He's only been in the race for 3 weeks. Blah, 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 blah. What they're doing is basically saying, look, you can't hold this guy to the same standards as Herman Cain or something, which is crazy.
That wasn't the exact quote.
No, I don't think Ray did that. He didn't go, no, he did not do that. I agree with you.
I don't think you can predict anything in politics, save an election, is a consequential event before the fact. You don't know until they go in to stumble or don't stumble. This is going to be a deal where they go in, and for most people aren't going to watch this. You're going to hear about it if one of them makes a mistake or makes some news, and if nobody does, it's, you know.
When you say most people aren't going to watch it, do you mean that you don't think Republican primary voters are engaged enough at this point to be paying attention?
I think there's some curiosity about it, but I don't think it's must-see television at this point. I think, you know, when you get closer to making your own decision, you know, right now you can sort of, you know, move along with the confidence that if one of these people either shines or turns into a bozo, you're going to hear it on the news tomorrow, and you don't necessarily need to set apart part of your Wednesday night.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be. I mean, I think there'll be primary voters watching it, but I think it's not going to be a ton of people. This is, you know, this is another event for us.
And that's right? Also just a comment on the state of television, right? I mean, I don't watch any TV live, but I will see all the relevant clips on the internet tomorrow.
Well, there are also 6 debates in 5 weeks.
Right.
And so at a certain point, we're just going to be going, oh,
that's
God,
like the 2008
again?
Race. You know, the Hillary and Barack show is on again.
All right. So
you know?
What are the metrics to the degree that we believe that there are metrics for success here or there are ways to judge Perry's performance? What are the metrics?
This is a preliminary fight. It's not the title fight. You're sort of watching these people for the very first time. Some of them, you're certainly watching them interact for the very first time. And you're sort of seeing, well, you know, that one got that one's goat a little bit there. But it's like a professional interest. It's not really like a voter interest. I don't know that anything's going to come up. I mean, it could, but I don't know that anything's going to come up or that you should expect anything to come up in this first debate or in this first little series of debates that's going to make up your mind for you.
You know, it's just no negative headlines. You know, no. I think really don't say anything monumentally stupid. Don't lose your temper. Don't allow yourself to be baited. You know, if you're Perry,
just come across as competent and affable, right?
Well, don't you think so? Well, I mean, we say that these debates don't make a difference this early, but I am absolutely convinced that the die was cast on Pawlenty when he was given the opportunity in that first debate to double down on Obamacare, and he backed off, and he looked like a total wimp. And I really think that the perception of Pawlenty as not ready for primetime was solidified in the minds, maybe not of the voters across the country who were, I would grant you, were not paying attention, but some Republican primary voters, but also the great mentioners, all the people who are, you say, this is for us. Well
that's what I mean.
Well, for us, that was a significant moment in right. That it resulted in a lot of people dismissing Pawlenty out of hand.
Well, and that's all I mean is that, you know, if Perry gives, you know, us, you know, something to talk about, if tomorrow morning you get up and, you know, whatever you subscribe to, the ABC, you know, all the political first in the morning mailers come out, and the headline in all of those is, you know, Perry stumbles or Perry says something stupid or, you know, Perry falls
on his
face.
I believe he stepped on that rake, right?
Or says something not right.
Well,
factually.
Well, you know, I think in debates you can really get away with saying things that are factual.
Well, but if Perry
can get away with, I think you can get away with a lot of stuff.
You can get away with a lot.
Look, if Perry says, we teach creationism in Texas public schools, which was something he said in the first week that was factually incorrect.
Right.
If he lays something out like that, that's not right. I do think that that's going to be,
you know, again,
a problem.
I would not underestimate the Perry campaign's ability, which everyone at this table has witnessed time and time again.
Right.
To say no, you know what, the sun does rise in the west. To hell with you, and as he said to you, and anybody who thinks that ought to just watch out.
Or is on thin ice.
Well, I think that's the kind of
ice that is not melting as a result of climate change.
The important thing kind of moment he wants to avoid, right? I mean, was a very uncomfortable, like, sort of losing your temper kind of moment.
Right.
Well, and I think that one may come back. But the only important thing really going on right now is the finance primary. And the people that are going to contribute tons and tons of money to these candidates are making their decisions about who to contribute to. And they're making a professional...
Well, he's already won that
debate. Well, some of it. I mean, they're making a professional assessment where they say... I'm either going to freeze on Romney right now and see how this Perry guy shows up. I'm going to redirect from Bachman. I'm going to double down on Bachman. They're going to make those kinds of decisions right. Watching their performances now. This isn't about voters right now. I mean, it is, but it isn't. The people that are really, that these guys are trying to impress and that whose favor these guys are trying to get are the ones who are going to give them money, particularly by September 30th, which is going to be the first financial mark with Perry in it where everybody says, okay, size them up. Here's a number attached to each name. This is a poll that you can really look at and say, this one says 20 million, this one says
right.
30 million.
So, and in that sense, I mean, a different way of asking your question, Evan, I think, is not to say necessarily how do we score it, but, you know, in a positive way, but how do we negatively score it?
Right.
And so really all that Perry, I think, really has to look out for is that somehow he looks weak in a way that makes the funders kind of back up and makes the media back up.
Okay.
And,
okay.
And that's
I buy that.
So Pawlenty showed a negative threshold.
Pawlenty showed the investors, maybe not.
And, you know, the criticism of Perry Kerry from the Republican establishment is. I thought Alex Castellanos, Republican consultant, who is no fan of Perry's going into this.
Used to work for Romney, used to work for Carol
right.
Strayhorn.
He said something over the last couple of days that's been repeated a few times on the cable shows. You know, no one's going to want to vote for Elmer Gantry for president. So the degree to which this debate performance solidifies the perception of Perry as a reckless gunslinger.
Right.
Who is going to have electability problems in the fall? That's a negative. To the degree that Perry comes across, as you said, Reeve, as affable, folksy, stays out of danger areas. Well, that's a net positive.
But I would say two things about that. I would say, A, you know, Alex Castellanos is not an unbiased party here, as Ross
says. Oh, no, completely.
I mean, you know, he's invested in
another candidate.
In another candidate, and also as a personal stake.
Well, he's not invested in the candidate currently. He's not working for Romney now.
Yeah, but more importantly, it's a business thing, right? I mean, they got, you know, when there was that whole dispute over the RGA, when people were unhappy because they were giving work to Castellano when he was working for Strayhorn.
Right.
So these guys are fighting.
When Romney was the president.
Basically, they're fighting over money. And so, you know.
Right. But you understand, though, that there is attention given to people, even who have an axe to grind. Exhibit A, Carl C. Rove this morning on George Stephanopoulos saying, Rick Perry's got a huge problem on Social Security, blah, blah, blah. We know that that's not exactly a clean relationship either.
That must have been very uncomfortable for George Stephanopoulos to have Carl Rove on him.
When is Phil Putt coming back?
I can barely breathe.
Can't we bring back? Ben never would have made that joke.
I was wondering, is the SNL season started yet? That's one thing that also,
2 weeks.
What actually will sort of show what people take away from this is a big thing is, I think, just however they decide to caricature him in this debate on SNL.
Well, there's that.
Saturday Night Live's still on the air.
Rick Perry's prime for an SNL caricature, mostly because Bush was such a big hit for them, and like rightly or wrongly, they're probably going to go the same way with that.
I think they probably are. I mean, you know, the other thing here, you know, speaking of comedy gold, you know, Sarah Palin's still hanging out there. And
oh my God, I was watching on Twitter the speech, right? So I was following her speech on Twitter on Saturday, and I was going, she's going to announce. I can't believe it. She's going to announce, and of course. Didn't, right. But didn't not announce.
I don't think she's going to, but I
still can't believe she's going to get in the race, and it's probably bad for it. I still continue to believe it's bad for Perry.
Comes out of Perry. Her voters come out of Perry and not out of Romney, I think.
And if Bachman has any voters left by the time that happens, but Bachman is now swan diving.
I just don't
think
she's going to get in.
No, I don't either. For what purpose? She's so much better.
Well, she had all those initiatives she wanted to put forward that she outlined in her debate. How else could she do that unless she's in a position of some sort?
I don't know. We're entering this interesting period where you sort of get to see whatever your opinion is now. You kind of get to see over the next 4 or 5 weeks whether Perry has legs as a candidate. He's got a great start.
Do you have any doubt that he's going to have legs as a candidate? I mean, I'm no less convinced.
Never seen him on this field. I don't know.
I'm no less convinced from the last time we were all sitting together around the table. I said then and I'll say now, Perry's a nominee barring something else. I've seen
undeniably true.
But I've seen nothing
that he said.
Well, that's true that I said it. It's also true that it's true. I've never seen.
It's also true that it's true.
Right. I have seen nothing so far that tells
Elmer
me
Elmer Gantry was obscure.
Elmer Gantry's not obscure.
The meta version. This is the meta Tribcast.
Every Tribcast is the meta Tribcast. I see nothing in evidence yet that tells me that anybody else has the potential to knock this guy off. The only thing that can derail Perry is Perry.
You weren't convinced by Ron Paul's attack ad this week?
I think the next 4 or 5 weeks are going to tell you whether Perry has staying power as a national candidate. And I don't, you know, our experience is that he always outperforms. He always, you know, always underestimate him. He always outperforms your expectations. But we're in the period where everybody's watching him to a great extent for the first time. And it takes a while to flesh these things out, and you're just going to see how it goes.
But you got to beat somebody with nobody, and can we just say Romney is a lousy candidate?
Romney, you know, I mean, you can construct a narrative where whatever Perry does or Bachman does or whatever, Romney ends up looking like the safe choice for the Republicans.
Yeah.
That's not a tough narrative.
Yeah, the question is really how is this going to shake out among, you know, both, you know, I think first among, you know, we talked about the Republican establishment and, you know, how elements of the public, you know, this is the Castellanos thing, I think is not a good gauge of the Republican establishment.
No, I completely agree with that.
Is the money and you know, some of the other leadership people. And I think, you know, he's looking pretty good at that. But, you know, it's still a long way from the election. I think last time I was here, we kind of said it's easy to be very myopic about this and think that the moment you're in right now is the determinative moment. Like, right now we can call. You know, we can't.
Well,
I mean,
I agree with you. We're in the myopia business, believe me. I mean, that's, well, and, you know, okay. I don't mind that.
The question with Perry the first couple of weeks was, you know, and this is the kind of thing that could recur. The question with Perry the first couple of weeks was, is this too strong? I mean, it's not that he's Texan, it's that he's awfully Texan. It's that he's awfully...
Well, there was where the Castellanos, Elmer Gantz.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like...
He didn't say Elmer Fudd.
It's kind of the too spicy argument. You know, it's like, I like the direction of the spice, but that's just too much.
The analogy I think is interesting that has come back up, and I just want to put this down as a marker. We'll see if it ultimately stays in the ground, is to 04. Do you remember what happened in 04? Kerry was perceived to be too safe, too boring. Howard Dean comes along, and quickly the bumper stickers became date Dean, marry Kerry.
Right.
I wonder if the answer here in the end is going to be, we're going to be looking back on this, it's going to be date Perry, marry Romney. That in the end, people will decide, as they decided about Dean, feels good.
Too spicy.
But in the end, too much.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And that ultimately they go back to Romney because Romney's the safe choice. But ironically, Romney also is potentially the safer choice from an electability standpoint in the fall. We don't know that yet, but maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of, I mean, I was going to say this when we were talking couple of topics back. I mean, I think that a lot of the conventional wisdom, as is often the case, is, you know, that's only halfway accurate, right?
Right.
That is, a lot of conventional thinking right now is proving to be wrong. And I think that this environment is very unpredictable and very volatile. You know, think about where we were at the state level cycle here and what happened in a lot of those state races. There is, you know, there's a lot of sort of boiling beneath the surface going on out there in the electorate right now, and, you know, even among the kind of establishment class. And I think it's hard to see. And I think the idea that, you know, and this is why, another way I thought Castellanos was wrong, this idea that, you know, people are going to be scared by an Elmer Gantry, all indications are that people are looking for Elmer Gantry. Right. At least there's a big faction of people out there that are vocal, mobilized, and they're the people that will be watching the debate.
So right, but Elmer Gantry is maybe, just to take the Castellanos argument into further into the weeds, is Elmer Gantry a better primary strategy than a general strategy? That's the question.
Well, yes, but we also don't know what the general election is going to look like. And I think we talked about this. You know, I mean, if these folks stay heavily mobilized, and if you do nominate, you know, the more ideologically driven candidate, which I think we have to sort of say at this point, the governor certainly is, then, you know, you're going to have, you know, a lot of mobilization. You and I were talking about this off the grid the other night. I mean, I think, you know, the conventional wisdom is, you know, you run hard into the edge in the primary, and then you move to the middle. Well, you know, and broaden your base. The other strategy that may be out there in a highly mobilized, ideologically driven electorate is not broadening your base but deepening it.
Right.
And that very well may
make sure your base is the most intense and go. Right.
Yeah, that very well may be what the Perry campaign would have in mind. I mean, it's, you know, we've seen them run that campaign before. I mean, it's what they do. They do it well.
But there are enough votes within his base to deepen in Texas. The question is, does the national electorate set up in such a way that there are enough votes out there if he simply deepens to win an election?
Yeah, I would
be surprised if the Perry campaign is doing much serious conversation right now about a general election. I think it's get out of March and April, and then you rebuild this thing. You
that's
know,
probably true.
We'll figure out that problem when we get to it. And frankly, you know, whoever gets out of these primaries, The general election now seems to be described as Obama versus not Obama. And
what the Perry people want.
That frame stays there whether you ran to the right or ran to the middle or whatever.
They want that worse than stuff. This is what we said back in 04. If the election's a referendum on Bush, Bush loses. If the election's a referendum on Kerry, Kerry loses. With the help of the Swift Boat guys, the election became a referendum on Kerry. It was an exceedingly close race. We forget back in 04, if 60,000 potheads in Kent, Ohio had turned out for John Kerry, we'd be in the second term of the Kerry administration right now. I mean, it was a very close race. But they managed to do it based on making the election about Kerry. And so the Obama people are already signaling they're going to make the election about Perry.
I wonder what the vice president would be doing right now.
Yeah,
Oh my God,
John
that's
Edwards.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's no. You know,
well, they might not have been a Riel Hunter actually if that had happened.
I should append to that. I mean, in terms of that running to the right, there's no. I mean, I'm not saying I, you know, that is necessarily the best thing for them to do. But it certainly seems characteristic of the Perry campaign and Perry himself,
right,
that it's a lot easier to envision the Perry being Perry campaign rather than, you know, the Perry being Kerry campaign.
Right.
Can we move on to the young eligible state politicians that are lining up to be courting the voters here. Although a lot of that, the elections will depend on the maps ultimately. And you were at the first day of the redistricting hearing, Ross.
Right, in a giant freezing courtroom in San Antonio, Texas. I counted 28 lawyers on the official side of the rail, and there were 6 other people that I'm pretty sure were lawyers, but I didn't list them.
How many journalists?
Four.
Four.
Right.
You guys were outnumbered.
About the normal record. Yeah. You know, what's at stake in the lawsuits basically is whether the state of Texas drew legal maps. And the challenges to the maps, these are the maps for the House, for the Senate, and for Congress, primarily for the House and for Congress. Whether those maps adequately account for the growth of Hispanics and blacks in the state of Texas.
Within the rubric set by existing law.
Yeah. Right, right. So, you know, basically the arguments are over whether there should be another Hispanic seat in Houston, another one in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, another one in South Texas, and perhaps another one in San Antonio, in El Paso. And then there's fights over lines over here and lines over there and all of the regular stuff. The short form of this is the Texas court, it's a federal court with 3 judges on it, the Texas court's going to hear all of this evidence through DSCCS, which nice date. They picked Mexican Independence Day to close the trial, and then they'll probably withhold their ruling.
Flair for the narrative.
Yeah,
huh?
It's great, isn't it? And then they'll withhold their ruling because the state of Texas filed separate actions in the District of Columbia Circuit, and the Texas court, the federal judges in Texas will likely wait for the D.C. Circuit to rule. So we probably won't know whether they need new maps and what those new maps will look like until, you know, November, something like that. The D.C. court hasn't set a trial date. So in the meantime, everybody's kind of lining up as if the maps that are in place now being challenged in court will be the maps that they run on next year. And so we're getting candidates, you know, popping up all over the state.
So, Evan, what are the most exciting new candidates that you have your eye on?
Well, I don't know that I have my eye on particular candidates. I think that, you know, with every couple of days we're getting an announcement about a different person getting into a congressional race, and obviously there are a lot of familiar names on here. Right. You know, the fact that Mike Jackson's running for Congress is interesting. The fact that Randy Weber is running for Congress.
Maybe.
He'll be in next week,
right?
They sent an email out yesterday saying, we have an exciting announcement coming.
We sure
but
are
the
thinking
email
about
is
it. Oh,
basically,
my gosh.
Oh, you know, all signs are pointing in the positive direction. You know, it's a series of dominoes because, you know, Jackson leaves, so Taylor, the House Republican Caucus Chairman, Larry Taylor, decides to run for Jackson's seat. Taylor vacates, and now you have a bunch of people filing
within
for the House.
Within 4 minutes of that.
You had Dennis Bonin's older brother. You had Greg Bonin. You had another fellow, Rhett Eubanks. Rhett Eubanks announcing he's filing today. You know, the thing about a redistricting year is you get a lot of shuffling. And we're getting a lot of shuffling.
I was talking to Larry Gonzalez a few weeks ago at a deal up in Round Rock, and he said some of the House members had sat down and kind of, you know, back of the envelope, who's leaving, who's staying. And he said they got to 45 members of the legislature they thought might not come back.
You could see a lot of – you could really see – we thought last time was a lot of change.
Well, redistricting –
You could really see a lot of change.
Like you say, redistricting does a lot of this. A lot of members vested. That big, giant class of Republicans that was elected in 2002 has now vested. And so those guys, you know, if they're sick of this, it's an opportunity to bail out.
Get out. You got health care and a certain amount of money coming in.
Right.
Right, yeah.
All those guys are loving big government right now. It's great.
Yeah. What do you know about – I saw you tweeted this the other day. It was really tweeting it off of something that Jason Embry reported. What's with Paul Workman maybe having a challenge?
Do you know anything about why that is?
Well, that's
a tough district. I mean, that was a pretty hard-fought primary.
Right.
So, I mean, I think there's a lot of froth up there.
Right.
Do you get the sense that Workman did anything during the election, during the session that
No, but if you think somebody was elected,
exposure, you know?
If you think somebody was elected the first time on a fluke, the best time to punch him is the first real.
You hit him right away.
It's just like Wendy Davis, but inverse, right?
Right.
I would have imagined the challenge to him would have come from a Democrat and not a Republican.
No, it was the Republican primary.
He ran against Zimmerman or Welch. He ran against
Holly Turner. Holly Turner.
Oh, well, that was the Holly Turner.
And then there was a serious race between Workman and Valinda Bolton, who was the incumbent, Democrat. That district swung. So there's two questions there, or there would be two questions there if we were on the same maps. The first one would be, can you beat Workman in a primary? The second one would be, it's a swing district. The map's redrawn. It's not a swing district anymore.
It was more pro-Republican.
So the question now is, can you run to the right of Workman? You know, Workman tried to frame that campaign and did frame that campaign as kind of, you know, what we were talking about a minute ago with the general election stuff. He was making sure he wasn't running so far right that he couldn't run against Valinda Bolton. That leaves some space to the right of him.
It's interesting.
Right. Framing is a good thing for a construction guy.
Can I ask a quick question about the... Going back to the court case that started.
Right.
I mean, you basically have... representatives calling other representatives racist, or at least insinuating
very close to it. I mean, they came, you know, they walked right up to it.
Trey Martinez, Fisher, and Solomons.
Is that just a typical part of the redistricting process, or could that cause some?
Well, what's happened in Texas and in some other states, but what's happened in Texas, they said this in court the other day. I didn't realize this. Texas is the only state without an ethnic majority.
What?
Anglos, Hispanics, and blacks, none of those are over 50%.
Well, that's true.
They're pluralities.
They're plural. Right. Yeah. Right. And Anglos still represent the largest plurality among the groups.
Right. So.
But it's a majority minority state.
But what's happened in Texas, you know, as in some other states, is that there's a high correlation between minorities and Democrats. And so if you're arguing about whether you drew lines to favor one party or another, as this gets to be a closer and closer argument over 20 or 30 or 40 years, you're arguing over white districts and brown districts, white districts and black districts, brown districts and black districts. And it becomes, you know, you can talk about it in racial terms, you can talk about it in party terms, but it's also interwoven that you get this kind of friction that you're talking about, right?
Well, and in a technical sense, there's even matters of, you know, the argument of, you know, what is it? What is the proper threshold for minority representation when you're looking at elected officials? Is it that, you know, the elected official is of an ethnic minority group that's the majority in that district? Or is it simply through the, you know, party alignment that you are able to elect, the minorities are able to elect the candidate of their preference?
So one of the things that's really interesting in all of this is there's a thing called stacking, which is basically when you take a population that appears to...
You asked.
Yes. So don't look bored, Reeve. You brought this up.
So Kiko Canseco's congressional district runs from San Antonio to El Paso. And the people that drew the new maps very carefully took out precincts, Hispanic precincts, and replaced them with Hispanic precincts of the same size that don't vote in the same numbers. So... facially, this looks like the same district and looks like the same mix of Republicans and Democrats, the same mix of Hispanics and Anglos, all of that kind of stuff. But if you look at voting turnout, you just moved this to a Republican Anglo district. And so that's called stacking. And so there are a bunch of arguments like that. And you can't do too much of that kind of moving around before people start calling each other racist.
Right. I think that the direct answer to your question is, discussion of race is unavoidable in this, and there are going to be accusations of racism at one point or another. I think you don't avoid it. It's too woven in the thing itself, and all, you know, and all the kind of weed stuff that Ross is talking about, and also you know backing off from 30,000 feet, you know, it's woven into the history of the state.
Yeah, one of the
race matters here.
One of the lawyers for I think from MALDEF yesterday said that, you know, it doesn't matter whether the Republicans or the Democrats are in power. The Anglos write the maps, and they do it on the backs of minorities. That's where you started the trial. That was in the opening statements.
Well, let's hope that there can be as few hard feelings left over in the end as there are between Evan and Bill for his intro. So we'll turn it back over to Bill Hammond for a second.
If you have questions or comments about the TribCast, please email podcast@texastribune.org.
Thank you.
That was a really lousy segue, Reeve, honestly.
Well, you guys talked for so long. I just had to get it over.
He's getting so nervous. Yeah. You know, what I wanted
to
ask about when we were
to.
Talking was about, have you heard?
We're still going. We haven't left yet.
What do you know about the rumors that Alisada might just run for a judgeship. Is that true, or is he really thinking?
I haven't talked to him yet. I heard the rumor.
Yeah, so we should check into that.
Well, the podcast is still going.
Okay. Well, that's a good subject.
Next time, come back next time.
This is like. On next week's podcast.
That's right.
Right. It's scenes.
In the meantime,
soon, unless we get distracted.
In the meantime, on behalf of Evan, Ross, Jim, and our producer Todd, this has been the Tripcast. Thanks for listening.
Go back to strangling that raccoon.